Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. With March being Women's History Month, it is a perfect time to spotlight how UBS continues to empower women at every step of their financial journey through research. With that, the UBS Chief Investment Office recently released a global report, Gender Lens Investment, The State of Women in 2025, which identifies opportunities for investors across sectors for in and by women. So joining us today to provide some takeaways from the report, share some of the findings, and to spotlight UBS's Own Your Worth initiative, glad to welcome Carrie Shuffman, Head of Women's Wealth, as well as Amantia Muhadini, Sustainable and Impact Investing Strategist from UBS. With that, Carrie, Amantia, great timing. I know we're coming off of International Women's Day, which recently took place on March 8th. So very happy to be with you both to be having this conversation today.
Thank you so much for having us, Dan. I'm very excited about this.
Yes, thank you so much, Dan, and great to be with you and Amantia for today's discussion.
Absolutely. So let's dive right into it. Amantia, in this year's report, you reviewed how women globally are advancing across a wide range of metrics. So tell us some of the areas where you've seen progress.
Thanks, Dan. And let me start by saying that International Women's Day really was a date on the calendar that allowed us to really focus our minds on these metrics, which we are looking and reviewing throughout the rest of the year as well. We set out for this very ambitious project of taking a look back across metrics at how women are doing in this century. So really these almost 25 years of this kind of century. And the project was very ambitious. So I'm just going to call out a couple of the data points here and would really encourage people to look at the full report. Let me start by saying that we were very pleasantly surprised, really happy to kind of see that in the very critical area of education, globally, on average, women and girls have been making huge strides. Looking at World Bank and UNESCO data, we see that at the very early stages of education, kind of what we call here primary school, the gap has almost virtually closed between girls and boys who are completing the first stage of education around the world. And when we look further out at tertiary education or that university or college level degree, there we're very surprised to actually see that at least here in the U.S., more women are having their bachelor degrees than men. Globally, this kind of ratio of women outpacing men in tertiary education also consists. And I think we'll keep coming back to this concept. Now, education was one thing that we saw progress. A second one that we'll note is what Carrie and I always talk about, which is wealth. So women currently manage an estimated $32 trillion of global spending. That is a very significant amount. And according to one data set from Nielsen, women are expected to control up to 75% of discretionary spending worldwide. So current spending, future spending, as well as increases in the wealth that women own and manage are also significant areas of milestones and success.
Well, Amantia, it's very encouraging to hear about that progress. You spoke about education, wealth, ownership. On the other side of it, Amantia, where are you seeing challenges that exist today? Where does more progress need to be made?
Yeah, lots and lots there as well. I'll stay with education. I said there's more to say there. The World Economic Forum's Future of Job report predicts that 65% of children that are entering primary school today will work in job categories that don't yet exist. And so in other words, a way to think about it is that the education, the formal education that is serving children of all genders, mm-hmm. right, today may or may not serve them in the future. And so one of those areas of education that shows a lot of promise is vocational training or on-the-job apprenticeship-based kind of models. And unfortunately, those are types of areas where women continue to be underrepresented in kind of education. And so that's a gap that could present challenges. A second one is that historically there's been a lot of research around a pay gap or a gender kind of pay gap for women and men that is replicated across regions. And those data points are stubborn. We really have not seen them move meaningfully, really in the last three decades, which is also kind of an interesting area that we go a little bit in depth and looking at the research and what it shows for what leads to this pay gap. And then finally, a mixed kind of positive and negative area is financial inclusion more broadly. I think Carrie has lots of thoughts there, but at the very baseline level, men and women have almost virtually also closed the gap of access to a bank account. So baseline, do you have a formal bank account? And globally, about 78% of men and 74% of women do have that. However, if you go a little further in around other financial inclusion metrics, around access to loans, access to credit, good advice, that's where you still see gaps. And those could perpetuate then broader challenges that really do not allow women to take full control of their opportunities and really show up in the world in the way that they ought to.
Okay, so some more work to do, though nonetheless some terrific progress has been made, as you noted earlier, Amantya. Do, of course, encourage our listeners to read further into this by attaining a copy of the report directly, though I do want to welcome Carrie Shuffman into the conversation. Carrie, Amantya touched on women's wealth and financial inclusion, even amidst challenges. So what do you see in your research on how women are stepping up as decision makers on financial matters?
Sure, yeah. And again, it's so great to be with you, Dan, and Amantya for this discussion, particularly as we just celebrated International Women's Day and we are in the midst of Women's History Month in the U.S. So our women's wealth team at UBS has done extensive research over the past 8 years on how women actually approach the major financial decisions and investing decisions in their households. And so we've actually gone out and spoken to and surveyed women from all different backgrounds, financial situations, generations, professions, single women, married women, divorced women, widowed women, a really, really broad and diverse population of women to actually ask them about their experience in making financial decisions and in their experience managing their financial journeys. And so what we found in this research that we actually call Own Your Worth is that many women recognize, I would say most women recognize the importance of financial participation, the importance of being actively involved, what that can afford you in terms of the ability to achieve your short and long-term goals. But despite recognizing the importance of financial participation, some women may not always be taking that active role in making those long-term financial decisions. So actually, interestingly, our original Own Your Worth report found, for example, that about half of women in heterosexual marriages said that they defer long-term financial decisions to their spouses. And a majority of single women that we surveyed said that they put other aspects of their well-being ahead of their financial well-being. So there was this recognition of financial inclusion, financial participation as being important, but sort of a gap in terms of the intention versus action. But the reality is that, you know, women control and are on track to control record wealth, as Amantya said, which is great news. And women really recognize the tremendous financial power that they are stepping into, as the data shows. In fact, 90% of women that we surveyed said that they believe financial engagement can help them have greater impact. And Amantya mentioned when it comes to those shorter term financial decisions, liquidity considerations, sort of the cash flow and spending decisions within households, we do see women participating equally, if not taking the lead. But where there is still a gap to close is around those longer term financial planning and investing decisions. So that really begs the question of how can we as an industry, how can we as a firm, how can we support women on their path to greater financial participation? What role can financial services play in that, in bringing more women to the financial table and helping to increase involvement in those longer term financial decisions that we know can have a significant impact on one's ability to achieve your goals in the long term, but also to help close that wealth gap that Amantya mentioned a moment ago. And then, of course, Amantya, your new piece explores some of the solutions around financial inclusions and opportunities to support women's wealth journeys. So it's a really great piece that I think ties a lot of what we're talking about together.
Yeah, thanks so much, Carrie. And in some ways, the reason why this is all complementary is that we focus a lot on the desk side of the research. But I'd love for you to share a little more around the conversations and discussions that you have and sort of in this broader Own Your Worth cover and umbrella. I mean, what are you seeing are the specific needs in terms of wealth management that will help women kind of come closer to the financial table and really take a sit in there for a long time?
Sure, yeah. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, every investor is unique. Women, men, we all have different goals, different concerns, different personal stories and backgrounds when it comes to money, different things that we want out of life and different visions for how our wealth will help us get there. There's not necessarily specific needs that women investors have necessarily, but, and Amantya, I know you and your team have explored this extensively, there are certain demographic trends and certain trends in the data that we see that impact women differently on average, and specific data points that point to ways in which wealth advice can potentially be geared toward women in a way that might resonate better with them. So I think that's sort of what we see in the work that we do. So take, for example, the demographic trend of longer life expectancy for women. We all know that women tend to live longer on average than men by about 5-6 years. So that means that as women, our savings need to stretch for a longer period of time in retirement. So certainly that should be a component of wealth advice that is provided, right? As should the question of long-term care planning. Knowing that for married women, they're more likely to outlive their spouse. For single women, they will also be on their own as they age. So what does that look like in terms of a woman's financial plan into the future, as she navigates that phase of her life or plans to navigate that phase of her life? So that would be one specific example. We also know in the U.S. that women tend to, on average, take on more of the burden of caregiving, whether that's for children or aging parents or other loved ones. So how does that impact your financial plan? You know, if you are working, if you are a part of the workforce, are you taking time away from the workforce? Are your earnings and therefore your savings impacted? Or potentially, are you actually spending more of your wealth on providing care to loved ones? So those are all considerations that ultimately should be taken into account when providing advice to someone in that position. There's also a lot of research, and again, sort of generalizing because every woman is different, every man is different, every investor is different. But there is a lot of research, and Amantya, the Chief Investment Office, has published pieces on this that shows that women tend to be more focused on investing to achieve specific goals, particularly longer-term goals, rather than being focused on performance alone. And women also tend to be more risk-aware than their male counterparts. Again, not necessarily risk-averse. There's a lot of industry data that says that, but we like to say it's actually risk awareness. It's wanting to understand what the risk is and what the potential reward is before making that decision. So it's really more of an awareness, understanding the big picture, how the risk ties to the goal. So those are some of the differences that we see and things that I think are important to talk about. So while there aren't necessarily specific needs that women investors have, there are certain things that we tend to see resonate more or impact women more specifically that tie back to the type of wealth advice that, you know, that we try to offer in helping them navigate their financial lives, wherever they might be on their financial journey.
Yeah, I love that. Dan started out by noting our framework in this report of investment for women, in women, and by women. And I think, Carrie, you're doing two things here. You're talking about the investment by women as wealth owners and kind of the way that they make decisions. But also what you're doing is you're giving this masterclass example of how investment for women, in other ways, in companies which know how to serve the needs of women as a population, really would look like as analysis. So this can apply in financial services broadly, but the similar analysis applies to investments in education, in healthcare, where really it's not about thinking about men and women as different, species almost, but it's really about contextualizing where mm-hmm. someone wants to receive a service, what is the specific service that they need, and how their different context is different. And in our view, investment for women requires this kind of analysis across sectors. And if done correctly, could identify new opportunities, which would be hard to spot otherwise.
I think you're exactly right.
Well, with that, Amantia, Carrie, thank you both very much for joining us here on Market Moves to spotlight this very important and actionable research. Again, I do want to point our listeners and clients to the report, which we have been making reference to today, A Gender Lens Investment, The State of Women in 2025, which is now available for you. For UBS clients, please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor to receive a copy directly. I also want to highlight the website ubs.com/women. On that page, you can locate all research, resources, and solutions as it relates to UBS's Own Your Worth initiative. Though, Amantia, Carrie, thank you both again for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.